She doesn't even go here.
Welcome to episode 4 of Teenage Wasteland, the teen movie podcast. How's everybody doing?
Very good.
I'm okay.
Very good. Are we a little rusty?
1 month. I think it was like a month or maybe 3 weeks.
Since we did our last one.
Yeah.
This will be a once a month podcast, everybody.
Once a decade. Well, we are officially 1 year into quarantine, COVID-19 quarantine.
How are you guys surviving? Still surviving?
Well, the sun is out and it's shining in beautiful Las Vegas. So we're doing better. Definitely.
We're like a month out from pool weather and I just like cannot wait.
Right. So we're almost there.
All of our venues have been closed for a year, right? So I'm like writing copy about like, we can't wait to come back. Like, blah, blah, blah.
For their social media.
But the good news today, I got like our first show confirmation, like confirmed new show.
Nice.
Well, it's for
when?
2022.
For
but
February
still.
2022. But at least it's not a cancellation.
Yeah.
Right. There's light at the end of the tunnel.
Definitely.
There is light at the end of the tunnel. Or light at the end of the bridge.
I knew you were
the train. Yeah, let's talk about Stand By Me.
From the rags to sacks to the best on wax, it's KLAM in Portland. It's Boss.
You guys want to go see a dead body?
Update on the search for the missing 12-year-old Ray Brower.
Kid's gone. They're never going to find him.
Not where they're looking.
I still don't think we should go.
The year is 1986, and Americans have joined hands, literally, in an attempt to make a continuous human chain across the country, as Hands Across America tries to raise money, $15 million they did, for local charities to fight poverty. Halley's Comet reaches its closest point to Earth during its second visit to the solar system in the 20th century, with the next sighting predicted to be in 2061, so be sure to mark your calendars. Out of Africa, starring Robert Redford and Meryl Streep, directed by Sidney Pollack, wins the Oscar for Best Picture. I've never seen it.
I've also never seen it.
You guys should watch it. It's fantastic.
I have seen Top Gun, though, the highest grossing U.S. movie of the year, $357 million.
We should be watching Top Gun 2 right now.
Yeah, right? The same year, Marvel has its first splash in Hollywood, which is a flop, as Howard the Duck couldn't float.
Oh, yeah. It was directed by George Lucas, too.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That movie is so weird.
It's weird.
Like, it's like a duck, like a... and, but he's like really raunchy. It's like a kid's like movie. It's
a raunchy
just
kid's
awful.
Movie.
Yeah, it's just like it was the worst.
Well,
it's terrible.
It tanked.
Yeah.
The TV phenomenon The Oprah Winfrey Show debuts in 1986. And the world is introduced to the wave, which was brought by the attention of the 1986 FIFA World Cup in Mexico.
Oh my God.
Woo! Sporting events would never be the same.
I mean, the wave is a definite better addition than the Vuvuzela.
Oh, yes.
FIFA. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Yeah.
But in the shadow of all these events, relatively new director Rob Reiner's Stand By Me is released just 2 years after his cult classic, This Is Spinal Tap, had debuted.
Oh, God, I love Spinal Tap so much. Yeah. That is genuinely one of the funniest movies ever made.
I mean, it's like a mockumentary kind of rock band. And
yeah.
I think Stand By Me is maybe his third or fourth movie that he's directed. And the crazy thing is the next year he does Princess Bride. So he went on
a
nice little early run.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, so now this is the first time we had a movie that took place in a different time frame than when it was released, so we thought we'd do some...
Oh!
Yeah, so the movie was released in 86, the movie takes place in 1959. So we thought we'd do a few fun facts to set up the America of 1959, where Dwight D. Eisenhower is president, and the U.S. has been at war with Vietnam for close to 4 years at this point. Alaska and Hawaii are admitted as U.S. states, which is kind of crazy. That doesn't seem that long
ago. That is crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy to think about.
I think it's Gigi, or maybe it's Gigi.
Gigi.
Takes home Best Picture, and by all accounts was a bit of a racy movie for back then.
They showed ankle and calf.
Maybe a collarbone. The Dodgers had won the World Series against the White Sox. Baltimore Colts would go on to win their second NFL championship in a row, since this was before there was the Super Bowl. Playboy magazine debuts for the first time, featuring Marilyn Monroe as the centerfold. And in Hollywood, the film Ben-Hur premieres, and at the time was the largest budget of any movie ever made, at $15.9 million spent on the largest set ever created.
That's a lot for back then.
Oh, it's a ton of money. But it was a smashing success as it won 11 Academy Awards. Well, yeah, that was 1959, and so I chose Stand By Me, and the reason I chose this one was because I think the movie's timeless. It touches on, like, friendship, especially as, like, a young child, kind of before life gets a little more serious. You can literally just kind of, you don't have any worry about what tomorrow is going to be. You're just kind of living in the moment. And I watched the movie for the first time when I was probably in, like, fifth or sixth grade, which was the exact same age as the kids in the movie. So it just felt like you could relate to every one of them, and you could even assign a kid from the movie to a kid in your friend group. You know, like, you could just... They felt very authentic, each character. And I mean, me and my buddy Sam, we would watch this movie probably every weekend, to the point that we learned how to play Canasta, right? Which is the card game that they're playing in the tree fort. We would eat Pez all the time.
I didn't even think that was a real game.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a fake game that they were playing.
We would play it, and we'd even have, like, we made, like, our own little clubhouse tree fort thing. And then even at his cottage, we'd go on long, long walks and, like, kind of just trying to get lost, you know, like, we never did, but we would just go out with water Pez and some cards and just walk around, pretend like we were on, like, a Stand By Me adventure. So this one was
hide stuffed animals out there and pretend you found a dead body.
Put some ketchup all over it. But, yeah, and I think when you watch it as an adult, it still holds, and you kind of see it from a slightly different perspective, but I think it still just takes you back to, like, summers as being a kid, which is just kind of like the golden
age. Yeah, just getting into trouble.
Yeah, getting into trouble. And just
innocent fun, too, though.
Yeah, exactly. They're so innocent.
It's funny that you say that they don't have, like, a care in the world, because I actually think they have, like, it's pretty heavy.
Agreed.
For, like, a kid's movie.
Something I really, like, I haven't seen this movie in a long time.
Same here.
I was probably in middle, maybe high school the last time I saw it. So obviously haven't seen it as an adult, but seeing it now, and it's relatable for that age too. They think they're so much more grown than they actually are.
Right.
And I remember feeling like I know everything at like 12, 13
exactly.
years old. And it's
yeah.
like, you don't know
28,
shit.
30, you still kind of...
Yeah.
And they all dealt with super heavy traumas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think,
yeah, traumas is for sure.
Well, I think the one line where they're like around the campfire and the narrator's like, we talked about the things that were important before you talked about girls. You know what I mean? And it's like
right.
so true.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they really didn't care about girls. They're just like talking about Goofy and Mickey Mouse Club and just...
What is Goofy?
A dog.
Goofy's a dog. Goofy's a dog.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
That
so they're
so
just
funny.
Like, they're kids. Like,
yeah.
In fact, being like adults, when they're smoking their cigarettes and are like, nothing's better
Dude.
Than a smoke after a meal.
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
Like something they heard their dad
you?
Say.
Yeah, right.
For sure. Their parents were saying that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely just parroting, you know, adults. So similar to Jordan. I watched this movie a few times when I was a kid, and I, like, remembered the main pieces of it.
Yep.
But I really hadn't seen it in, like, 20 years.
Yeah, we both actually kind of forgot what happens. We're like, I was like, doesn't someone die or something like that?
Right.
And I was really just thinking about the leech part.
Right.
I definitely remember the leech part. Yeah. It made me scared to go swimming in, like, ponds all the time.
Same.
I remember the lard-ass part.
Yeah.
That was, like, burned into my head.
That part's still gross to me. And the bridge part.
Yeah.
Yes.
Always, like, I remember as a kid feeling so anxious during that part and just, like, yelling at the TV, like, run! Yeah. Run faster!
Yeah, they set it up
perfectly. And then when he falls down, oh, my.
So for you guys, it was probably, like, you probably appreciated the most rewatching it.
Right.
I would agree. I think, like, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Like,
I forgot how cute movie. It was.
And I also forgot how much, one of the big things that really stood out to me rewatching it is, like, how much in that movie has just become, like norms to kids. Like, the two for flinching. That,
right,
that's, like,
right.
That is just, like, a standard for, yep. like, young boys. Yep. Everyone yep. does that. There was one
can't relate. Not a boy.
Did you do two for flinching with your friends?
No.
I mean, I did. But I do think it is kind of like a boy thing, especially yeah, at that yeah. age. They kind of, like, you got to kind of, like, prove your toughness or, you
right,
kind of, exactly. you got to, like, kind of be, like,
girls
a tough guy.
Prove that, yeah, girls prove that in a different way. Where boys, it's, like, toughness. For girls, it's more, like, popularity, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. yeah.
I remember, just as an analogy, I remember the first time I watched an old Bill Cosby, like, stand-up. And just thinking, like, this is everything my parents say to me. Like, right. like all of his jokes just became, like, my parents' jokes. And now for this, it's like, oh, my gosh, is that where I got that from? Because yeah. I say that all the time.
Yep. I think it's definitely more for boys, but...
I don't know.
It is a sharp left turn from Bring It Bring On. It was
like, hard detour.
Very different movie. Yeah.
This movie definitely has its heavy moments.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about yeah. you guys, but I cried at least 3 times in this movie. Again, and I know exactly what happens. It's just one of those movies that no matter what, it strikes a chord.
You could be a real writer someday, Gordy. Fuck writing. I don't want to be a writer. It's stupid. It's a stupid waste of time.
That's your dad talking.
Bullshit.
Full true.
I know how your dad feels about you. He doesn't give a shit about you. Danny was the one he cared about. And don't try to tell me different. You're just a kid, Gordy. Oh, gee, thanks, Dad. Wish the hell I was your dad. You wouldn't be going around talking about taking these stupid shop courses if I was. It's like God gave you something, man. All those stories that you can make up. And he said, this is what we got for you, kid. Try not to lose it. But kids lose everything unless there's someone there to look out for them. And if your parents are too fucked up to do it, then maybe I should.
I really feel for Gordy.
Yeah.
With his dad.
I want to give him a
brother.
Hug so bad.
I know. Which is not something I ever, like, experienced growing up, very luckily.
Yeah.
And then, like, one of the first lines in the entire movie is Gordy says, like, about Chris. He's like, everyone knew he was going to turn out to be a bad kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah.
And I thought, like, that's such a brilliant line because it's like this kid doesn't even get a choice in it. Like, everyone around him has decided
right.
that he's a bad kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even the smallest mistakes he made
mm-hmm.
are, like, burned into his
oh, yeah.
like, what people think about him.
Right. Those quotes and stuff, even just, like, the deeper meaning behind the whole movie, I didn't catch as a kid. And now
right.
I'm seeing it. And, like, now, like, we're not parents. Obviously, you guys are. But, like, having more of, like, a parent mindset watching it,
yeah.
it's, like, you want to just, like, you know, hold the
oh,
kids'
yeah.
hands and stuff. Whereas, yeah. you know, last time I watched it, I don't know, 15 years ago, whenever, I was probably just like, oh, gross, leeches. And now I'm like,
like yeah, high,
the trains, leeches.
Playing right. cards, smoking cigarettes, being
yeah,
silly.
But now you're like, oh, he needs therapy. I just want to, like, hold his hand. We can go
right.
talk, like,
right.
go on a nice long walk, and we can get through this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it strikes, like, every chord. It seems, like, effortless. I did read when they were casting Vern, Teddy, each of them, Jerry O'Connell was kind of like a goofy kid. So he was, like, a good Vern class clown type. Like, Corey Feldman, it had, like, a really bad childhood and was really crazy. You know what I mean? So I don't think the kids, they did a great job acting, but they weren't, like, having to stretch to be something
right.
they weren't. They were just, like, enhancing who they were. And, like, Will Wheaton was kind of nerdy and... I mean, River Phoenix
is just cool.
He's just, yeah, like that cool kind of
yeah. yeah.
knows so much for how young he is kind of
mm-hmm.
kid.
Yeah, wise beyond his years.
It's also sad just knowing, like, River Phoenix, you know, dies.
Mm-hmm. Not that much longer after that.
No.
And Corey Feldman just struggles with addiction for years. Now, Will Wheaton, he, you know, was on Star Trek and has actually carved out a really great career for himself in his niche. But, and then Jerry O'Connell is. But it's just also sad knowing what the actors in real life are going to go through.
Mm, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's a sad movie.
It is
a sad movie, but it's enjoyable for all generations. Whereas the three previous movies that we've watched.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I can't see us watching that with our parents.
For sure though. No, that is such a true statement.
Yeah.
I could not wait till Miles is old enough to watch this movie. The minute he turned 10, I want him to watch it.
Yeah.
It's almost like educational.
This before American Pie?
Oh yeah.
You can watch American Pie with him. That might be better.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one to watch with your uncle. Yeah.
Your cool uncle.
With your cool uncle,
Yeah. I remember seeing Caddyshack for the first time with friend's dad. Oh. No, it wasn't Uncle Steve, it was a friend's
dad. I watched that one with my grandpa. I remember watching that with grandpa.
Yeah.
So we can go around, but who was everyone's favorite character?
Fern.
Fern.
I love him.
He's so innocent.
I know, the whole time I'm just like, you can do it, buddy. You can do it. So him.
He wins best glow up from that kid to Jerry O'Connell.
I think my favorite scene with Vern is the very beginning when he comes into the tree fort and he tells them about the plan, right? He's like, oh, we should go do this. I know where the body, we can do it. And then, you know, the other three boys get really into the idea, come up with a plan, and then Vern's like,
well,
I don't know anymore. Vern, it was your idea.
Hey, you guys, I bet you anything that if we find him, we'll get our pictures in the paper. Yeah, we can even be on TV. Sure, we'll be heroes. Yeah.
So when Vern brings the comb, and Teddy's like, Vern, what'd you bring a comb for? You don't even have any hair. I brought it for you guys.
No.
He's so nice.
He's so sweet. He's just thinking out, you know, he's thinking about everyone else but himself. And I just want to give him a hug.
They also do such a good job of showing the difference between the older kids versus them.
The Cobras? Yeah.
Those are some bad kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, they scare me.
Yeah. Who's your favorite character?
Chris.
Yeah.
He's so cool.
Yeah, he's so cool.
He's so cool.
He's my favorite character, too.
Yeah.
They named really that cool. character after
Oh, yeah. You're less than a year old.
I was one. Bet you didn't find that in your research.
Yeah.
No. My favorite character was Gordy. Now, in the book, it sounds like they didn't really tell the story through Gordy like they do in the movie. They kind of focus on Gordy. But I like at the end that he finally stood up for himself. I don't know, his character is just kind of downtrodden. And then at the end, he finally pulls the gun on Ace. And you know, earlier in the movie when Ace steals his brother's hat, he just got his revenge. And I think at the very end, he probably makes good with his brother's death and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Just at the very, you know, he's all crying at the when they see the body. And Chris is like, hey, Teddy, Vern, go look for sticks or something. Right. You know what I mean? I need to talk to
cover him up.
Yeah, I need to. Yeah. And I need to talk to Gordy.
Good friend.
Yeah. That I loved their friendship.
That is so mature of him to do at that age. I don't know if I would have recognized that in the same way at 12, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
In that kind of a situation. I need to be there for my friend right now.
Right.
Yep.
What a great movie. It has so many layers.
Yeah. It really does.
He's always trying to make peace. Mm-hmm. Even when Teddy wants to dodge the train. And he pulls him off the tracks and he's like, Teddy, you're crazy.
You can do it on the way home.
Yeah. And then he's like, he always had to make peace. So he's like,
Well, I feel like that just goes with the fact that he was probably abused and he just deals with those situations different because he's seen a lot in his life.
Yeah, he's experienced.
And who's the other one? Teddy.
Teddy.
He took his in a totally different route of also being crazy, his abuse.
But they do such a good job of developing him too and his dad.
Oh, yeah.
And that scene with that crazy junkyard guy.
Yeah.
I know who you are. You're Teddy Duchamp. Your dad's a loony. A loony up in the nut house in Togas. He took your ear and he put it to a stove and he burnt it off.
My father stormed the beach in Normandy.
He's crazier than a shithouse rat. No wonder you're acting the way you are, with a loony for a father.
You call my dad a loony again, and I'll kill you.
It's a very, very Stephen King, like, character development focused, like, flashback driven story, which I'm honestly usually not a fan of Stephen King, and I think this
is the exception.
Is one of the exceptions. Mm-hmm. There's a few, like, great ones.
We read that out of, not at this point, there's maybe like Carrie, Cujo, Pet Sematary that had been adapted to movies. But Stephen King, like when he watched the screening of this with like the production company, he had to leave the room after it ended for like 20 minutes, right? But he came back in and he's like, that was like the greatest anyone's ever done with my work. And I think Gordy was somewhat autobiographical.
Right.
You know, like he was kind of the writer. I didn't know that kind of makes sense. Yeah.
I pieced that. I assumed like it was him thinking about himself being a weird kid.
Yeah. Did you guys think anyone stole the show? I mean, I think River Phoenix, even though he's not the lead, he just like commands the movie.
Yeah.
Lard ass.
Did you notice that lard ass was wearing a like fat suit? Because like he's big.
Pillows tied around him.
Bad fat suit. Yeah. Like I think they actually just stuffed a pillow in his
exactly.
Shirt.
Exactly. You could see where they like tied the string around it too.
Yeah. Also the part where he like where lard ass like throws up.
Yeah.
You can they didn't.
Oh they yeah.
It's like a hose.
They, yeah, yeah, you can like almost see the hose on the side of his face. Yep. It's like you guys couldn't have like worked on his angles a little bit better.
Well, I was telling like Amanda,
SNL quality barf stream.
I told Amanda, I was like, I'm glad it's that way because it feels so much more fake where it's not disgusting.
Yeah,
it's not like overly disgusting.
Everyone's just
if everyone just had been like little mouth barfs, you'd be like, oh god.
Yeah.
Oh,
and dude, the barf was cottage so cheese gross, and blueberries though. Mixed together. That's what they did.
Gross.
Nah, yeah. I mean, Lardass, his scene is memorable. Yeah. Everyone's always going to remember the Barforama.
I do need to mention all of their wonderful slang, their 1950s slang.
Like, skin it?
Right. It's skin. Just so silly.
What was the one that, like, didn't catch on? We were talking about
Goochers.
Goochers.
Oh, Goochers. My gosh.
When they were in the junkyard and they all flipped four tails. And Vern's like, oh my god, that's a Goocher.
Oh,
that's really bad. That's really bad.
You
luck,
guys don't say that?
No.
I'm always saying that.
Oh, are you joking?
How was work today? Oh, I got Goochered.
I got a Goocher. Yeah.
Yeah.
That one definitely didn't stick.
Mm-mm.
But
no.
What was your guys' favorite scene?
I still think the train one.
The train.
Yeah, it just, like, that's the one that's embedded in my brain the most. And just, like, you know, when I watched it when I was younger and still when I have watched it now, I know what's going to happen. And my palms get sweaty.
Knees weak, arms heavy.
Yeah. Mom spaghetti. Every time. It freaks me out.
I mean, that's a great scene. I would have to say the leeches scene just because it is like terrified me my whole life.
Yeah,
or not terrified, but just like, oh my god,
you would think twice before going into open water.
Yeah, they were in that pond for like 10 seconds and got like 100 leeches
huge leeches too.
Sick. Gross.
What about you guys?
My favorite scene was River Phoenix's monologue.
So let's just say that I stole the milk money, but old lady Simon stole it back from me. Just suppose that I told this story. Me, Chris Chambers, kid brother to Eyeball Chambers. Do you think that anyone would have believed it? No. And do you think that that bitch would have dared tried something like that if it had been one of those douchebags from up on the View if they had taken the money? No way. Hell no.
I thought that was just such a good scene because he was believable. And then we found out that the director had pulled River Phoenix aside. It was like, I want you to think about a time when an adult disappointed you or let you down, but you don't have to tell me. I just want you to think about that when you're doing the scene.
Mm. Pulled it out of him.
Yeah. He did that a lot throughout the movie, too, that director. He told the guys that they were fucking up the movie to get them to cry.
Oh.
A couple times.
That would also be really hard to tell a bunch of 13-year-olds.
It's like, I just did it for your, I needed those tears.
Yeah.
He always like hugs them after. Did that?
Yeah, exactly.
Who? Neutral. I know. I just found that out today that was Jess's dad. I was like, that's who the director is? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's
Rob Reiner.
It's my favorite scene.
I saw something that River Phoenix was quoted saying that if he didn't have his family to go back to at the end of the movie, he was going to need a psychiatrist. Huh? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, the character was just so River Phoenix, real to him. And yeah, River Phoenix. And just, you know, put him in like a weird spot that he needed to like get back to his family, or he's going to have some issues. Sure. Yeah. It's crazy. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Which is kind of like all of them.
That's scary.
I think for me, my favorite scene, it's kind of a weird one, but it was the ending as they're walking back into town, and you know, they're all kind of walking back to their houses, going their separate ways, and the narrator is then like saying what comes of them like later in life, you know. Mm-hmm. and the one thing he says, you never have friends like you do when you were 12, and does anybody? And but then at the same time, he's like, sometimes a friend will come in and out of your life like a busboy at a restaurant, which was like Vern and Teddy to them, right? Because he's like, you know, because I think he said Vern and Teddy, we never really hung out much after that. And, you know, Teddy does odd jobs around town and no one really hears from Vern or something like that. And then Chris and him like kind of stayed in touch, right? They're like the better friends.
Yeah, but they definitely stayed more in touch.
Yeah, and I just like the way that it ended like that, and then it kind of cut to the narrator, the writer, Gordy, as an adult, and then him, like, being with
his
son and his buddy. I thought that was a good way to end it.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of tied it all together, and then just summed up friendships.
Yeah, because it is so true. It's true, you know? You go through friends at that age, and they're the most important friends. Like,
right.
That gets you're like,
hang out, like, every day in the summer.
And then,
yeah.
Just
and grow. Then, especially back then, you know, like before social media or anything like that, like it'd be pretty tough to stay in contact with a high school friend.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, like, sure. I don't know what your dorm phone number is. And then they move where, you know, you're never going to see them, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. I had a lot of friends in elementary and middle school, but I'll stick to middle school just because of this, that like I don't even remember their last names, so I don't even know how to look them up.
Yeah.
You know, from like summer camp or whatever, and we'll have like the best summer ever, and we told each other secrets and like cry together and laugh together, but I don't even know their last name,
right?
Which is wild.
In and out of your life like a busboy.
Yeah, exactly.
Jordan grew up in Castle Rock, Oregon.
Castle Rock is not a real town.
Brownsville is where it was filmed, but maybe that was close.
Which is a teeny tiny town that I'd never heard of before.
Right.
Yeah, but it's not too far from where I grew up, so that's fun.
That is cool. Best song on the soundtrack, which I owned.
Yeah, my
on CD.
Did?
Oh, hell yeah.
Well, obviously, best song has got to be Stand By Me, but we'll take that one out because that's like one of the best songs ever written.
Yeah. I think mine is the lollipop one. Only because that one just like sticks in your mind always, and I love the bum bum bum. You know?
And it is Rock in the Treetop.
Rockin' Robin, yeah.
Rockin' Robin, that's what I was thinking.
Tweet, yep.
Tweedledee. I mean, that whole soundtrack reminds me of
old oldies.
Dad's soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
It's great.
Yeah, Yakety Yak's great, but I was definitely thinking Rockin' Robin.
Rockin' Robin.
I will say, too, I do like the like orchestral version of Stand By Me that they have playing from time to time. Cool. Yeah, that was really good.
It's such a distinct like melody line that like even slowed down and orchestrated like that, you still know
it's Stand By Me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did read that they were going to have Michael Jackson do a version of Stand By Me to be at the very end, but then when they got to the you know editing and everything, they're like, no, like we need to use the original. We can't have
it when it fit.
Yeah, it just would have been so random at that point.
Yeah.
any problematic parts?
I mean, some of the language, definitely, right? They drop a hard F-bomb.
Yeah,
I was going to say the teen smoking again, but it's also very common.
I feel like back then kids probably did smoke pretty young.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't as like frowned upon. In, right. It's 59, right?
Yeah.
He's got the cigarette packs rolled up in his sleeve. And they smoked
cabbage leaves or something.
Like on this, as the prop.
That was the prop.
Oh, they smoked cabbage leaves?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh.
Or like lettuce. Yeah, something.
Yikes. Give them tobacco. Yeah.
Just let them smoke.
Yeah. I definitely never had a friend carve cobras into my
Oh, my God. Oh my God. That was insane. Honestly, that's
probably the most crazy.
And they just keep showing it. I'm like,
yeah.
It looks like, it's done terribly.
Yeah.
You're going to mess up the tail.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all messed up.
You're making me fuck up the snake
Yeah, the whole thing
part.
Looks awful. Yeah, that was rough. That was like not even a tattoo. That was a straight up scar.
Yeah.
Carving, yeah.
Carving. Ugh, gross. Yeah.
What about you guys? Any problematic parts?
I felt bad for the truck driver that like ran off the road. Like, was he okay?
That was gnarly.
Did he die?
That was crazy.
Seriously, how is he going to get all of that lumber back on his truck?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there was really anything even wrong with that they got wrong. Everything just felt so perfect. Like every scene. The other thing too, when we watched it, it's a pretty short movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's only like an hour and a half.
I love that. I'm a big fan of short movies.
Yeah, me too.
I guess when I watched it when I was younger, it just felt
longer.
There's
so much that happens in
that
movie.
They do pack a lot in, but they move from scene to scene pretty quick and everything just kind of flows so easily that I don't even think they got anything right. Even like the flashback scenes with his brother, like they come in at the perfect moment and, you know, in and out of like, Gordy's like, huh? You know, and the guy at the supermarket's like asking him questions, but
right.
It doesn't feel like anything was forced. Everything just felt natural.
Talk about an all-star cast.
Oh, yeah.
Is like anyone in this movie not like a Hollywood A-lister at some point in their career?
Seriously.
Right.
That's crazy.
I mean, the crazy thing was, too, some of the other people that auditioned for the parts but didn't get them or turned them down. Because Corey Haim auditioned.
Corey Haim?
Haim? Yeah, Corey Haim. Yeah. He auditioned to
Corey
be.
Corey?
Yeah.
He auditioned to be Gordy. And Rob Reiner's like, I think you might actually be a better Chris Chambers. And he's like, I don't want to be. I want to be the lead. And he turned down the role to be Chris Chambers to go do
a mistake,
movie called Lucas.
Man.
And I don't even. Yeah, here we are. We're not talking
about
Lucas.
Don't know what that is.
We're not talking about Lucas, exactly.
I mean, that's next week, but.
But yeah, I mean, they crushed it. So you want to do some DVD commentary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so the movie, like we talked about earlier, was released in August of 1986. Cost $8 million, but it grossed $52. For an expensive little drama, it did pretty well. And the crazy thing was that Coca-Cola bought out the production company that was going to make this movie. And 2 weeks before they were set to start production, Coca-Cola is like, nah, we're not going to pay for that. Like, we don't want to fund that movie.
Nobody's even drinking Coca-Cola.
yeah, right? Norman Lear ended up funding the movie himself. He gave Rob Reiner a check for $8 million.
Wow.
I think they worked together on All in the Family a little bit, so that's how he knew him and kind of trusted him, but it was like his personal money. Just gave it to him.
Wow. Where did that $8 million go, though?
The train.
Trains.
And the puke.
It's $4 million for the front and $4 million for the back.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of money they just filmed it in the wilderness. Like,
maybe they paid those kids some good good money. Maybe.
Good for them.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, and we've already talked about this, but the movie is adapted from a Stephen King novel called The Body.
But isn't it a short story?
It's a short story.
It's not
novella.
Even.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to read a bunch of his novellas in high school, and I personally think that those are better for adaptations because there's so much, it like allows the directors so much room to really like
interpret,
because it's very like Shawshank Redemption or Rita Hayworth in the Shawshank Redemption is the novella. It's like 80 pages, but like Frank Darabont spent years adapting it into the movie that came out and wrote and directed it, having these just small, like, well-written short stories really lends itself to, like, someone taking it and running with
Agreed.
It.
Agreed.
Right.
Well, you know what's funny is the book that came out with all those short stories, The Body, Stand By Me, and Shawshank Redemption were in that same book. And they also share some similarities where, like, in the movie, the kids need to cross the Royal River. And in Shawshank Redemption, that's the river that Andy throws his gun into. And there's a lot of, like, other little, when they're at the junkyard and they're all, or maybe when they're on the tracks and they're all thrown in how much change they got, right, to go get groceries, it comes out to $2.37, which is, like, a big popular number for Stephen King. Because, like, in The Shining, room 237. Exactly. Yeah. So it's, like, all those little things that he always kind of intertwines his worlds, you know?
He does. He definitely does. Even Castle Rock. Castle Rock is in, like, a ton of his stories.
Yep.
And it's even referenced in a ton of his stories, too. Like, I think they reference it in It a couple times, too.
Yep.
They, like, mention, like, oh, isn't that the person who died in Castle Rock and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So he definitely has, like, a whole universe within his stories.
That's interesting. I never caught that before. But, yeah, he does.
Rob Reiner, after making this movie, Castle Rock Entertainment, right? Like, TV shows, movies. He named, that's his production company, and he named it because of the town in the story.
That's crazy. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I actually thought that was Stephen King's company.
Yeah.
Nope.
I didn't know it was Rob Reiner's.
Yeah. At least, that's what I read online, that it was Rob Reiner's.
Wow.
Yep. Another fun fact was that the boys never saw the dead body until the actual scene. Because he wanted to, you know, he wanted to have a real reaction out of them. So he never.
And it was a real dead body. No, I'm just kidding.
He looked kind of cheesy. Looked like grape jelly coming out of his nose. I think that they did a good job of, like, one, for the scene, having him covered in leaves was perfect. Right? So then it's like, okay, you see him and then walk up to him and lift it up and see his face. I think that's probably, they probably were a little bit scared.
Yeah.
Or a little bit taken aback.
I was a little underwhelmed by the body, personally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you wanted it to be a little more gruesome?
A little more dead.
A little more dead. A little more decayed.
Yeah.
It's been there for like 2 weeks, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was making this face. Blah, 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 blah.
So this one I didn't read, but this is my take. And if you remember when they flash back to the bedroom where Gordy's talking to his brother Denny, and they're panning around his room, right? He's looking for the hat. There's Michigan State stuff all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we caught that. That makes no sense.
No sense whatsoever.
All right, well, hear me out. So his brother's a football star, right? Denny's a football star. They talk about how he's got focus on the game. This is 1959. Michigan State had won the national championship 51, 52, 55, 57. Rose Bowl wins in 54 and 56. I just think that they were the Alabama of the 50s. And that's how a kid all the way out in Oregon was, like, rocking Michigan State stuff.
Okay, that would
make
sense.
That's my theory.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't know a single person in Oregon who went to Michigan State. That's not a common thing.
Like, he was all set for, like, a scholarship or something.
Yeah.
Because he had two flags in there, too.
Yeah, two Michigan State flags.
It wasn't subtle. Right?
It wasn't subtle.
I was shocked by that. It's like, why not Oregon or Oregon State?
Yeah, or even, like, some California school or something, or Washington.
Right.
But that would make sense if Michigan State was the Alabama of the 50s. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. What happened?
One of the other things, and interesting to see what everyone else thinks, is the scene where the deer, where Gordy's sitting on the tracks the morning after they camp out, and the deer just kind of walks by and doesn't say anything. It just stands there. But then the narrator says, you know, up until this point, I've never spoken or written of that moment. Which made it seem like kind of spiritual. And
yeah, that's great.
I feel like he thought it was kind of like his brother.
That's what I thought too.
Or something kind of like looking after him and just kind of like a hello, like in the mm-hmm. spiritual world.
Sure.
You're not out here alone.
Exactly.
I'm with you.
Yep.
Common misconception, actually. It was based on Harry Potter. That was his Patronus.
Were you going to talk about that deer, though, on the set? It's a peaceful scene, but behind the scenes after that was over, they couldn't get the deer off the set. So they're like banging on pots and pans trying to get this deer to run away and kind of just stuck around.
What a chill deer.
That's pretty funny.
It's like, I'm going to be in the movie.
So this was a fun little fact. Kiefer Sutherland said in an interview that when they were on location for one of the scenes, that there was a local Renaissance festival going on.
Oh, that's fun.
And that, yeah. And so the cast and the crew checked it out.
Yeah.
They bought some cookies, ate them. Turns out they were pot cookies. And Jerry O'Connell, Vern's character,
yep.
They found him 2 hours later crying in the parking lot because they, you know, they ate pot cookies.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
He got dosed by Kiefer Sutherland. That is the worst, though, if you didn't know, didn't like prep.
Oh, it'd be terrible. For it,
and you're 12 years old.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. They also said that Kiefer Sutherland off camera to like stay in character would pick on the kids. Yeah, yeah. I think Jerry O'Connell said he was like afraid of him, like legit, like afraid of him. Which plays out well in the final scene. Those bullies, they were like really mean. Like, I feel like he was legit gonna cut him with that knife had they not stepped in with the gun.
I agree.
They were pretty crazy.
I mean, or at least tattoo something in their arm. Cobra Kai.
Different movie.
Yeah, right. The movie being released, it was such a success that there was a renewed interest in the Benny King version of Stand By Me that it was re-released in 1986 and peaked at number 9 on the Billboard Top 10.
Wow.
You know, 25 years after being released, which was incredible. The one thing in the movie when Gordy tells the lard-ass story, when it ends, you know, everyone cheers, but then Teddy complains, you know, what happens then? And he goes, well, that's it. That's the ending, right? So some people said that that was possibly a nod to the running joke in pop culture that Stephen King's endings suck and are often unsatisfying and disappointing.
That's funny.
Whether that was true, whether that was like a pop culture thing back then, I don't know, but it was kind of funny to think that maybe it was. And Teddy's like, well, what about this? What about after the contest, eats a burger, then he goes home and kills his dad, and then he runs away and joins the Texas Rangers.
Yeah.
Which is so funny, but also so sad, because, you know what I mean? Like, Teddy does want to kill his dad.
Yeah.
Poor Teddy.
Oh.
Cameos.
John Cusack.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That was a great
one. Oh, young.
He's so young.
He was 45. Can you believe that?
Aged well.
Richard Dreyfuss at the end of the movie and like the voiceover throughout. I actually didn't even put it together that it was Richard Dreyfuss's voice.
Right.
So he actually did not remember being in this movie. Someone was like interviewing him and he's like, was I in that? No, I don't think so. I don't think I was in that.
He says, he's like, yeah, I did the voiceover, but I don't think I was in any scenes.
Yeah.
Which he is. The other one that he's like C, B grade kind of actor, but the dad, Gordy's dad,
yeah, Marshall Bell.
Yeah.
He's in a bunch. He plays like a dickhead in a bunch of stuff.
Like a dickhead or villain or like asshole army sergeant. You know, Starship Troopers. He's in Total Recall.
He's also in Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, which is a phenomenal movie if you haven't seen
it. Oh, I haven't seen
it. Never heard of it.
Andy Garcia movie.
Andy Garcia.
It's great. It's really great. It's just like a very dark comedy. Not action like Total Recall, but like action-y.
Action movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Great, great movie.
I mean, to be honest, I didn't catch many outside of that. And I think, you know, they're outside of the Cobras, there's really no one else in the movie.
Yeah. It's not a huge cast.
No. And it really is. I think the reason why it is such a good kids movie is like, it's really just all kids all the time on the screen.
True.
Aside from the flashback scenes and when he's packing for the trip. That's really like the only time you see the adults aside from the junkyard and when they buy groceries.
Grocery store. Yeah.
Yeah.
So other than that, it's just them out being kids.
That town was also like deserted.
Yeah.
Not one of them. Yeah. It's like nobody lives in that town. Yeah.
Did you see that town though?
Yeah. I like how at the end of it, when they're walking back home, and they're like, and the narrator's like, our hometown has never seemed smaller. You know, because they've seen the world now. And I'm like, now you think it's small? Like, it's like a mile long. It's tiny. It's the tiniest little town. But that's
the thing about like being a kid, though.
Right. You think everything is so much bigger. Like the
world's so big.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all an adventure. So the critics' response, like we said earlier, Stephen King was a huge fan. Said it was the best adaptation of any of his work he had ever seen. The movie was only nominated for one Academy Award, which was Best Writing of a Screenplay, originally based on material from another medium.
Oh.
But it didn't win.
It did?
Which is surprising. No,
what could be better than that?
That'd be a good question.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
When trying to find reviews for this, there weren't really many. Roger Ebert didn't have a review. There weren't really any negative reviews, but I think what really like sets the tone for it is Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 91%, and the audience score is 94.
Wow.
Which to me is just like, if you're above 90 on Rotten Tomatoes in both categories,
yeah,
like that's just a home run.
Yeah.
You know?
I would agree. Yeah.
And
like, it'd be surprising to hear someone say they hated this movie.
Right.
Like, did you watch this movie?
Yeah. Oh, and you know what's funny? I did read that. So Jerry O'Connell goes on to marry Rebecca Ramon Stamos, right?
Yeah.
He did. And
Rebecca Romijn Stamos.
Is that pre-Stamos? Is it just Rebecca Romijn?
Right, right. Yeah, no. It's after. It's after she got a divorce. Yeah.
Rebecca,
they're still married, I think.
They are.
Rebecca Romijn Stamos O'Connell.
Yep.
But the thing is, they dated for, I don't know, a couple months or something, and they said that at a party, one of her friends told Jerry O'Connell that she was like obsessed with the movie as a little kid, like it was her favorite movie and had all the posters, but she never told him that.
That's,
you had to hear it from a friend.
She had a huge crush on Little Vern even as a child.
She probably had a crush on River Phoenix.
Yeah. So for sequels, none,
which is good,
you know,
technically.
They don't do a remake.
I will say it's referenced in Boys in the Hood.
Oh really?
Yeah. Fun fact, who directed Boys in the Hood?
Spike Lee.
No, John Singleton.
Yes.
He just died like a year ago.
Just die. Right.
Yeah.
So John was a big fan of Stand By Me.
Yeah.
And he did some homages in Boys in the Hood. So they go to see a dead body in Boys in the Hood. And I think at the end of Boys in the Hood, they do that same like fade out effect.
Yeah.
So like, remember in Stand By Me, he's talking about like Chris dies, and while he's walking away, he like fades out of the scene. I think they did that in Boys in the Hood too.
Yeah.
And I think that was, he was like a huge fan of Stand By Me. I think that's why he did it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a timeless movie, Stand By Me, and I mean, well, Boys in the Hood too.
Boys in the Hood too.
But we should definitely do Boys in the Hood too.
Yeah, it's a timeless movie that like every generation and every, you know, type of person loved.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see it, you know, adapted in other ways.
And I can definitely see Boys in the Hood being like, obviously not a sequel, but like almost like an emotional. It's very similar now that you make that comparison. Like, I never put that together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now it's like, yeah, it's almost like a similar
story. It's the Hood version.
Right. Being told through like completely different eyes.
Stand By Me. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. John Singleton was great.
So, what do you guys, who has the best career of the main characters?
Ooh, I've been thinking about this.
For me, it's River Phoenix, even though it's so short and not like, I mean,
it's hard to see him and not know that he would have been an amazing actor.
Well, you just know. He was already like there.
Yeah.
And how everyone compares him to Leo.
He was 13 when he made that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he just had some chops. And I just feel like if he's still alive right now, he's crushing it. He's made a movie with his brother.
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix's older brother.
I think that's a fair point to make.
Mm-hmm.
But because he died, I just can't give it to him.
Yeah.
I can't.
So who do you give it to?
Well, I mean, only one of them's played Superman in.
I mean, the reality is, though, it's, I'll be honest, I don't really know much of Will Wheaton's stuff.
He is, like, beloved. People love him. But, I mean, I do think Jerry O'Connell, he is just in so much stuff. He plays, like, random handsome guy in, like, he's just always working. Him and his brother are always working.
Yeah.
Well, and What's-His-Name had a good career, but also
Corey
went on a bad.
Had a decent career, but he just tanked. He just fell off so hard and...
Yeah.
And then he was in Corey and the Angels, which is one of the most important bands of our time.
Oh, God. I mean, it's really, like, it's crazy, because I remember when he came out with that, we watched it, when we went on his Instagram, we were just like, oh, man, like, this dude.
Like, what is happening? Like,
yeah, what is going on with this guy? Yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad. Although they're not main characters, you could argue, like, John Cusack or Kiefer Sutherland, even.
I definitely think John Cusack's probably had the best career, but of the main, like, five people, right? The four kids and Kiefer Sutherland. Kiefer Sutherland, I guess.
I think,
like, he did 24.
Mm-hmm. That was sort of his renaissance.
Yeah, he's in that.
I feel like all of
them had Three Musketeers.
A solid career.
There's just a lot of stars.
Yeah, just in different ways. They all, like, found their corner in Hollywood and were very successful in that corner.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, I could see that. It's impressive, the careers that have come out of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So on the flip side, who peaked?
I would say River Phoenix.
Yeah.
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 I think...
because of his death.
It's not fair because he died. Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't think it would have been his, like... Well, you know, I mean, it's a really great role. I don't know if it would have been his best, but, like... It's so good. He's so young. It's, like, so deep for such a kid. Yeah. It's crazy.
Letter grades.
Yeah, I know we, like, all give A's or whatever, but I do give this movie an A+. I think it's one of the movies that will stay with me forever. Yeah.
Well, we're starting with each of our favorite movies.
Right, so exactly.
I'm sure things will. And I'm pretty sure some of you assholes gave American Pie a B, so.
I think I give it an A-.
I give this an A+ too, though.
Yeah, A+.
It's on a different level than all the other ones we've watched so far.
Agreed. Has funny parts, has dramatic parts.
I love that they do give that deep stuff to kids, because at that age, life is so confusing. And when you have to deal with that kind of issues, they don't really make movies like that without it being like an after-school special. These kids are trying to have fun, but they're also like battling all these other demons.
And I think the reason it can do that is you don't have to ever see them at home.
Right.
You don't have to see it. You just know it by what they say and how they act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, very true. You know exactly who those kids are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great movie.
Good movie, Mike.
It holds up. Like, I enjoyed it so much more than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
What's our next movie?
I believe it's my choice.
It's Chris's pick.
Yeah.
Yep. Sophie's choice.
So.
Sophie's choice too.
Deep level.
Well, I want to keep the Jerry O'Connell cinematic universe like riding high, and I choose Can't Hardly Wait.
Yes. All
right.
Trip McNeely.
I love this movie.
And that's going to do it for Stand By Me on Teenage Wasteland. Tune in next time for Can't Hardly Wait.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.